I want to encourage every Christian here, whatever age you are, that there is always something that you can contribute to God's cause. When you read in the Bible of Caleb, when Caleb was 80 years old, he did one of the greatest works that he was ever involved in right throughout his life. And then you read of young people like Naaman's maid, who was largely unknown and certainly unsung, and yet she was the means that God used to see Naaman the general obey eventually what he was told to do and be cleansed from his leprosy. Remembering, of course, that God is no man's debtor. However insignificant your efforts for him might seem to be, do remember, as I often have to remind myself, that our labor for him is an investment. It is the best investment. And every Christian tonight can say, well, that is the position that I'm in, Mr. Salt, because a while ago, or maybe a long while ago, I responded positively whenever I heard God call to me in the gospel. And now my life is on the altar for him. And you know, men and women, that is the best life. Just living it for the Lord as best we can. But I'm a Christian long enough to know that not everyone responds to the gospel call in a positive manner. And this verse that I've read with you in Proverbs chapter 1 reminds us of that. It simply says, "But ye have set at naught all my counsel, and would none of my reproof." The verse here in Proverbs directs our thoughts to the Christ rejecter. You will have noted there in the verse the word reproof. It is a word that carries different shades of meaning. It carries the meaning to show the right. To show the right, and that is what you want to do when you believe that someone is on a pathway that is not the right one. It also carries the meaning of to correct by words. That's what our parents did when we were young. And that's, young people, maybe what sometimes a teacher does in school. And certainly that is what God does. He does it for his people. And as he speaks in the gospel, he seeks to correct men by the words that they listen to. There's another meaning to this word, reproof. It carries the meaning of the act of putting forth arguments or reasons. And all of that, when you take it together, is what happens when God's word is preached. And people like me, feeling their own significance and their own limitation, as best they can, they try to show the way. They try to show man his responsibility. And very often they mention the reward of obeying God's voice when he speaks. But God says here concerning some, "Ye have set at naught all my counsel, and would none of my reproof." Christ rejecters. There's another word that is mentioned just a few verses down, and I thought it worth drawing your attention to. In verse 30 it says, "They would none of my counsel, they despised all my reproof." And the word there, despise, simply means to treat with scorn. Something we need to think about right now, what we've done with the word of God. It's a solemn thought to think we've treated it with scorn. And unfortunately, that is the case right across the whole land this evening. It also carries the meaning here, the word despised. It describes the kind of contempt that provokes anger. If someone was behaving toward you very badly, there are some things that would provoke you to anger. All of us, we would be provoked to anger. But remember here, we're talking of men. And God's dealing with them and their response to his goodness to them. And as you think of Proverbs chapter 25 tonight. Proverbs chapter 1 and verse 25. You think of the words that we've considered very briefly together, reproof, and how it has been neglected and set aside, and God has spoken through his word, and he's used preachers, and men have heard, and they haven't listened, and they've neglected the word, and they perhaps have even treated it with scorn. I want to tonight to look with you at what I have called culprits to a wasted life. Culprits to a wasted life. At the very beginning, I mentioned how good it is to be a Christian, and you have something to contribute to God's work. It doesn't matter if you're preaching or investing your life on the mission field, or if you're the person that sweeps around the church and pulls the weeds out when they need weeded. You have something to contribute to God's work. And you look back on a life like everyone else, every other Christian, and think, well, maybe I should have, or I could have done more. But the unconverted man or woman, really what they look back on are wasted years. Wasted years. Years lived out without Christ. And there could be some that are listening tonight, and to this moment in time, that's how it has been. And there have been many culprits to your wasted life so far. I don't want to minimize the goodness of some people on a human level and their kindness and generosity towards other individuals. But we're thinking here of spiritual things and God's work and knowing him and doing his bidding. So culprits to a wasted life. The first one is a wrong perception of the long-suffering and mercy of God. A wrong perception of the long-suffering and mercy of God. There's a tremendous illustration of this in 2 Samuel chapter 9. It's to do with David. He's now at the peak of his reign. The kingdom is united. He has the following of very many people. And in that chapter, in 2 Samuel chapter 9, and remember, when we look at David, David was one of the greatest types of Christ in the Bible. So many things in his life pointed to Christ and to what Christ was able to do. And you have him here, and if I read the verses very quickly, in 2 Samuel chapter 9, it says, "And David said, Is there yet any that is left of the house of Saul, that I may show him kindness for Jonathan's sake? And there was of the house of Saul a servant whose name was Ziba. And when they had called him unto David, the king said unto him, Art thou Ziba? And he said, Thy servant is he. And the king said, Is there not yet any of the house of Saul that I may show the kindness of God unto him? And Ziba said unto the king, Jonathan hath yet a son, which is lame on his feet. And the king said unto him, Where is he? And Ziba said unto the king, Behold, he is in the house of Machir, the son of Amiel in Lodebar. And the king sent and fetched him out of the house of Machir, the son of Amiel, from Lodebar. Now when Mephibosheth," that's who this person was, "the son of Jonathan, the son of Saul, was come unto David, he fell on his face and did reverence, and David said, Mephibosheth. And he answered, Behold, thy servant." If you take that verse or those verses home and look at them in your own time, you will see some great parallels here between David's dealing with Mephibosheth and God's mercy and long suffering and kindness toward unsaved men and women. You see here that David sought him out as he was not looking for David. Mephibosheth's father, Jonathan, and grandfather Saul were dead. As far as they were concerned, in the minds of many, certainly Saul anyway, they were well rid of him. But Jonathan and David had a close friendship in life. And this son of Jonathan's, he was away hiding in some obscure corner. with, it seems, very few caring for him. Perhaps in abstract poverty. The place that he was living in is called Lodibar, and it means no bread. A place of no bread. And David sought him out as he was not looking for David. And men and women, that is what happens when we come to gospel gatherings like this. God comes, he's promised to be amongst us, and he seeks out men and women who perhaps come through the door and it wasn't in their heart to seek him. An unsaved person is seeking you tonight. But notice something else here. For all that David did for him, he brought him in, he put him at the table. There was no payment required. He wanted to do it, he said, for Jonathan's sake. Now, if you read earlier on in David's experience, he had a covenant with Jonathan, and Jonathan had asked him that he would show kindness to his posterity. So really what you're looking at here is covenant kindness. And in eternity past, God the Father covenanted to Jesus Christ a people for his name. We call them God's elect. Don't ask me who they are. My responsibility is to preach to everyone who will listen. And the sinner's responsibility is to come to Christ. But nonetheless, God covenanted to Christ a people, and no payment is required for their redemption because they're saved for Jesus' sake. Because he, or they will be saved if they come, because Christ has paid the price for their redemption. Whenever Mephibosheth was brought to where David was, things were far better than he had imagined. There was care, there was attention to detail, and there was human love. And all that David had set up for Mephibosheth was life-changing. A total change from everything that this poor man had ever experienced it. And you cannot read the chapter but think, but David was a kind man. How merciful he was. Saul was very bad to David, his grandfather. And yet he sought this man out. But he had to accept it. He could have said, I understand, but no thanks. Or, that's a nice gesture, but not now. He had to accept it. And men and women, so it is with the Lord Jesus Christ. When he seeks you out, when in the gospel preaching you're pointed to Christ, and you hear of all that he can do for you, to say, well, I understand that, is one thing, but to accept it is what you need to do. That is what you need to do. You see, people view God's mercy wrongly. God brings men away to meetings. He allows them to hear preaching in his providence. He brings people to gatherings just like we're in here tonight. And he has someone there to preach the word. And he has people around you, perhaps, who pray for you. And all of these things are brought together. And then you hear about judgment. And you hear about the need to flee to Christ now for salvation. And that's what we have to preach. And man looks at himself. And he looks at what he has just listened to. And he gives himself a bit of a shake generally. And away he goes on his merry way. And he's unchanged. And unsaved. Because he sees the mercy of God. But he has a wrong perception of it. You know why? Because he thinks it'll be there forever. He thinks it'll be there forever for him. In the book of Ecclesiastes, and chapter 8 and verse 10, says there, and so I saw the wicked buried. And very often in the Bible, in the Old Testament, the word wicked is simply used to describe those who are not saved. They don't have to necessarily be in extremely ruthless, wicked, bloodthirsty people. It means unsaved. And so I saw the wicked buried, who had come and gone from the place of the holy, and they were forgotten in the city where they had done so. This is vanity. You look there at verse 11, because sentence against an evil work is not executed speedily. Therefore the heart of the sons of men is fully set in them to do evil. You hear about judgment and nothing changes. And life goes on, and the blessings that God has given, you have your share of them. You think that God's mercy is going to be there forever. Over in Proverbs, again, there's another verse that is very important. It says, he that being often reproved hardeneth his neck shall suddenly be destroyed, and that without remedy. Let me tell you, men and women, think well of the opportunities that God gives to you. If he reproves you through his word and shows you that you're a sinner, think well of that. Because that verse in Proverbs tells us about a day of no mercy. A day of no mercy. The Bible tells us, kiss the Son, lest he be angry. And then it tells us about take you away with his stroke. It doesn't take very long for everything to change. And you know, there are people all across Northern Ireland tonight, and there always have been people who look at Christians. I'm sure they see the faults in us. Not hard to find them in me anyway. But they know there's something there that they don't have, and they're a bit like Balaam in the Old Testament. Balaam was a very unusual man. And on one occasion, he said something which was extremely noble. And maybe you've thought like this too. He said, let me die the death of the righteous, and let my last end be like his. You know, just 2.5 years ago at my father's funeral, just after it, there's a man said to me, he said, you know, Kern, at least he was ready. And I said, I know. That's what makes the difference now. And I knew then, and I know to this very day, that that man maybe had a thought or two on that occasion about what had happened and what will one day happen to him. But he soon forgot it. He soon forgot it, because Balaam said, let me die the death of the righteous, and let my last end be like his. And folks, Balaam died fighting against the Lord and his people. He died fighting against the Lord and his people. What mercy God, and if you know the story there in Numbers, what mercy God had shown to Balaam. But like so many people, he had a wrong perception of the long-suffering and mercy of God. God's been merciful to you and long-suffering for 10 years, maybe a lot longer than that. And somehow or other, because of your human makeup, you have convinced yourself it's always going to be like that. How many years has sin stolen? Remember, we're looking here at culprits to a wasted life. Great to see some young people here. Some of them I know are saved. Oh, they may struggle. Very easy to look at them and say they're so up and down, but at least they're pushing on, trying to do what they can. And when they get as old as I am, or maybe as old as some other people here, they can look back and say, well, I had my struggles, but it wasn't a wasted life, because I had the Lord and I did what I could for him. But this is a culprit to a wasted life. Men and women, do not have a wrong perception of the long-suffering and mercy of God. Thinking God's mercy is for another day will take the months and the years from your life that you could be living for the Lord. And then one day, that mercy will be gone. It will be gone. But there's another culprit. There's not only a misunderstanding or wrong perception of the long-suffering and mercy of God. There is well-being. Well-being is a gift from God to be appreciated by everyone. And it's something that we see all around us. The Lord makes the sun to rise on the just and on the unjust. Now, I know sometimes, Christian, it's easy to look at those who would be unsavory characters and think, well, how do they do so well? So many people like them, and look what they do and how they live and how they look upon the Lord and his word and his day and all of that. But God allows the sun to rise on the just and the unjust, and well-being is a gift from him, but it is never a plausible reason for us to say that we do not know the Lord. Suppose in my generation and right up to now, people of Northern Ireland, most have had a considerable, at least some comfort and known care in their families. There's contentment around us, and many people have causes for happiness. You think of them things. Comfort, care, contentment, and causes for happiness. And therefore, people think they have it all. Let me tell you this, judgment could fall tonight. It could fall tonight. Just was brought home to me a few years ago how quickly things can change when I went to visit a man in hospital who was unwell. Didn't seem to be terribly unwell, but he was unwell in hospital, and he said, "Mr. Salt, I've had a couple of rough days." And I said to him by his name, "And we're still praying for you and hope you get out soon." And I went home, and I don't know what I was doing, but I went into the living room and sat down there, and I got a book and began to read. And it's probably about an hour and a half after I had left the hospital ward and got a phone call, he's gone. Just in an instant, he's gone. Some years ago, a relative of my own, she had Parkinson's disease, but it didn't seem that she had anything else. She was just in her 60s. And she'd gone to hospital this time with this Parkinson's, and she had taken on well with it in some way or another. And just in an instant, even before they had time to say to my uncle, who was her husband, even before they had time to say, "Well, would you mind waiting out there?" She was gone. She was gone. Well-being is good. It's a gift from God, something to be appreciated, but it's never a reason to feel that we don't need the Lord. You know what's happening today? There are very many people in Northern Ireland, and further afield too. I just mentioned Northern Ireland because that's our place. And well-being is their God. And that means everything to them. There's comfort and contentment and causes for happiness. And those things are all well in their place, but they were never designed to take your attention away from your need of salvation. How many years have they stolen? Chasing after comfort. Something to bring happiness to the life. It says over there in Psalm number 10 and verse 6. I'll read verse 4. It says, "The wicked," or the unsaved, "through the pride of his countenance will not seek after God. God is not in all his thoughts." You see, if you were looking at that in the original language that it was written in, where it says God is not in all his thoughts, it actually would say words to this effect: all his thoughts are, there is no God. Now, that's Solomon serious. All his thoughts are, there is no God. His ways are always grievous. Thy judgments are far above out of his sight. As for all his enemies, he puffeth at them. He has said in his heart, I shall not be moved, for I shall never be in adversity. What a fool. I shall never be moved. I shall never be in adversity. You read some great truths in the book of Job. And in Job chapter 12 and verse 10, the words here can be applied to men in general. It says in verse 10, "In whose hand is the soul of every living thing and the breath of all mankind." Did you ever think of it that way before? God who has shown mercy to you and long suffering. We've covered that. God who has given to you contentment in life and a degree of comfort, and very many, you could list them, all the reasons for happiness. And you've rejected him, and here's a word that shows us, and in his hand is the breath of all mankind. Maybe you've spent decades just living for these things, and you've turned away from him. And tonight, in all likelihood, if you're not saved and you're gathered here in Market Hill Free Presbyterian Church, you're aware of God's mercy. And you acknowledge his giving hand. And things are pretty good for you right now. But I want to say, as I bring this point to a close, that you're walking a tightrope. And that's all. Because it talks here about our breath being in the hand of God. He can take it away in an instant. Job, in the book of Job, we read words that are very startling. He said, concerning man in general, he says, in a moment they shall die. In a moment they shall die. Some of you may have heard of Brownlow North, who he was used of the Lord in the 1859 revival. He preached in Belfast and other places in Ulster during that time. He was related to a former Prime Minister of the United Kingdom. And he had been brought up, he was in aristocracy, and he had lots more money and privilege than most people, and he spent his year, he fished all the best salmon rivers in Scotland and rented all the best grouse moors in Scotland, and he spent his time following his sport and his pastime. And one day when he was on a pheasant shoot, he was standing here waiting on the people driving the pheasants out, and his friend was standing just yonder, as you do, just down a few, maybe 10 or 15 paces from him, and they've been talking. And then he said something, and his friend didn't answer him. And he looked round, and he was lying dead. And that was the means that God used to speak to Brownlow North. And while there was certainly nothing wrong with the sports and pastimes, he realized then, I'm wasting my life. Wasting my life if I don't have the Lord in my life. And Brownlow North came to Christ and preached, and God used him in the days ahead. Tell me tonight, as you think of these culprits to a wasted life, have you had a wrong perception of God's mercy? You think it'll last forever? Is well-being something which occupies all of your thoughts, and it's just what you can get, and I say that respectively, and what you can be, but he's left out. And it has to be said tonight that you have said it not all of his counsel and would none of his reproof. I must move on here and mention this quickly. There is another culprit to wasted life, and it's procrastination, which simply means putting off. Some of you know the story of Lot's wife. And Lot's wife, she returned to a pillar of salt. And that is a vivid reminder of judgment for everyone. She believed the message that judgment was coming. She was intending to leave. She was heading in that direction. She was willing to leave her old life there. And she would leave some family there too. But she looked back. She paused. And she halted and she looked back. And the lesson from the story is this. Her heart was still in Sodom. Her heart was still in Sodom. Her feet were heading in the right direction. But her heart was still there. Maybe another few minutes she would have been utterly convinced and she would have left, but those few minutes never came because she looked back, and the lesson is, how long have you simply been putting off? Round the doors a few years ago with a man out of Aghalee, Mr. Robert Mitchell, and I were on the door, and we're talking to this young fella, And we didn't want to keep him all night because he had children in the house, and we were giving out invitations for a mission and mentioned salvation to him, the very pleasant fella. And I've never forgotten him, because when we said to him, you know, do you ever consider salvation yourself? And he just smiled. And he said, let's put it like this. It wouldn't be too high up my priority list. It wouldn't be too high up my priority list. Lots of people like that. Procrastination. Wouldn't write off salvation. But men and women tonight, wisdom, we mentioned that at the beginning, calls you to abandon your sinful course and give your heart to Christ now. Because now is the accepted time. As he stretches out his hand in love to you. Remember, he's done that so often and no man regarded. Let's face it, he's done it in Market Hill Church and no man regarded. People have left as they come. And there's been that procrastination, and it's gone on for years and years and years. What an awful culprit to a wasted life. But there's one other culprit to a wasted life, and it is fear. Fear of something different. Many people, and I'm one of them, don't do change that particularly well. Don't particularly like change. Have plenty of changes in my life, but that doesn't mean I particularly liked them at the time. An unsaved person, maybe there's a fear in your heart of something different, of the change that will bring. Maybe there's a fear in your heart of cost socially. Isn't it funny when people tell us we need to be saved, we think of all the things that it's going to cost us, and we fear how it's going to change our lives. Maybe you fear your own weak resolve. You know what the Lord said, the Lord Jesus? He said, take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and you shall find rest unto your souls, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. You need to forget about the fear tonight. You need to fear him who's able to cast both body and soul into hell. And fear that day of wrath that we read about over in the book of Acts, that he hath appointed it a day in the which he will judge the world in righteousness by that man whom he hath ordained. It's beyond any preacher to fully or adequately convey to you or to any audience the awfulness of being lost. What an awful thing for it to be written, so to speak, over your tombstone. Wasted life. Wasted life. Some of you will know a little bit maybe about Napoleon, who was a very, very strange individual. Glad I didn't know him. I wouldn't have liked him at all. And he did some very strange things in his time, and sometimes he would do things that were, he was very unpredictable, therefore dangerous. And Napoleon one time, he sent a messenger with a pardon for one man down to a prison in France. And whatever type of gratification he got out of that and doing it this way, I don't know. But he sent this man with a pardon for one man in a prison in France. And he went along to all the different people there. And he went to the cell and he talked to him. And he said, no, they put me in here. It wasn't me. And he went to the next scene and said, definitely didn't do it. Wasn't me. And one after another, they told him how innocent they were. Then he came to one wretch. And he said, I'm every bit as guilty as they say. And he got the pardon. He got the pardon because he took the rightful place as the guilty one. And men and women, as we come to a close, that's what you need to do tonight. No more wasted years. No more being controlled by culprits, because that's what they can be. Misunderstanding of God's mercy. Well-being. Fear itself. All of these things can cram in upon us, and the years go by and we continue without the Lord. I trust tonight that after tonight it will not be said of you, but ye have said it not all my counsel, and would none of my reproof. May you taste and see tonight that the Lord is good, and make him your own.